Hey, welcome to Transform Your Workplace. Thanks for the download today. I'm your host, Brandon Laws. We've got a great show for you today, and it's brought to you by Xenium HR. Go learn about Xenium's complete HR plus payroll solution and learning and development programs at xeniumhr.com. Today, we've got a returning guest, Josh Durham. He is the founder of Gamut Project Solutions and has this series called the Foundational Five Principles series. And in a few other episodes, we talked about communication, agreements, and today we're talking about the leadership principle, specifically around purpose-driven leadership. And he talks a lot about delegation, honest communication, how to knowledge share, how to mentor your people, and how to free up your time. I mean, as leaders, we get bogged down with firefighting, and Josh offers some expertise in that area as well. In every episode that I've done with Josh, he always talks about a gift of failure story, and him working in the construction industry for so long, he's seen some things, and he's been through a lot of challenging situations and made some mistakes, just like any of us could make. And he's offering up some of those thoughts on this episode. And if you go back and listen to some of the other episodes as well, he offers up the gift of failure stories as well regarding those principles. So you're going to get a lot out of this episode. I really enjoyed my conversation with my good friend, Josh Durham. So I hope you enjoy. Make sure to connect with him. He's on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn as well. Love hearing from listeners how you're liking the show, how you're applying these things to your workplace. We're out to transform workplaces in a positive way, and we're trying to provide educational material for you to take back to your teams. And we are thankful that you're getting a lot out of this show. We love the feedback. So enjoy today's episode with Josh Durham, founder of Gamut Project Solutions. Hey, welcome back for another episode of Transform Your Workplace. I'm very pleased to have Josh Durham back on the podcast. Josh, what's up, man?
Hey, Brandon. Good to see you again, man.
Well, we're following the series, the Foundational Five Principles that we had talked about early on in the kind of kickoff podcast. We've since done a series on all the principles. In the first couple episodes, we talked about the agreements and communication, and you ended each episode with a gift of failure story. And we're going to talk about that in today's episode as well. This principle we're talking about is leadership. And when you say leadership as a principle, you don't mean just like leader by title. You mean leadership at every level, right?
I do, yeah. And really the core of this is, personal leadership. The old saying that I didn't make up is, you can't lead others if you can't lead yourself first, right? And so the core of the leadership principle is really based on how you lead yourself through life. And yes, how you lead others as well.
Yeah, so how I wanted to start this was, of the leaders that you've grown up with, whether it's mentors, a boss you inherited, coaches you've had back, you played sports, so coaches are leaders as well, and even leaders without a title, what are some of the attributes that they've had that either you have looked up to or wanted to model as you continue to develop in your leadership journey?
Yeah, really good question. I think it's a long list of folks who, led me, whether they had a title that led you to that idea of leadership or not. There's a lot of folks that I've learned from. I've had some really great leaders in my personal and professional life, and I've had some poor ones too. And I think I've learned a lot from both. But, one of the core things about the leaders that were great ones for me that, I try to embody as a leader myself is, those are the folks I knew when I had a big problem that may or may not have involved them. I could call them and knew I wasn't going to get reprimanded for the problem. I was going to get advice and guidance. I've had other leaders who, they're the last person that I would want to call and talk to about the problem because, it would be an accusation session rather than, something productive that I can use to solve whatever issue I'm bringing to them.
You're so right about you can learn just as much from the bad leaders as the good leaders, because I've had leaders I'm around. I'm like, you know, like I don't not like them, but they're not inspiring me, or that's not the kind of leader I want to be. So you kind of, it's funny, like over your journey, you kind of pick and choose which attributes that you want to model for yourself. And I don't know if you can specify a couple of those leadership attributes that you tended to gravitate towards with people leading you, and also ones that you've just adopted yourself.
Yeah. I mean, in this session of the Foundational Five, I talk about two very different types of leadership. The two types that we talk about are something I call masked leadership. And then the other type that I talk about is called purpose-driven leadership, which is a concept that we've created and adapted from other quality leadership models out there. You know, the purpose-driven leadership approach and mindset is, you know, a common thread we tie between all the principles in the Foundational Five series. So let me just tell you what I've observed with masked leadership. This type of leadership is designed to protect your own interests first. The goal is to have and maintain a position of power and a title. This type of leadership usually uses fear or threats to lead and influence others. Someone who's leading like this typically does not admit, you know, their own mistakes and is going to blame others for failed outcomes. And then ultimately, at the end of the day, I say that, you know, masked leadership is less efficient and more costly for organizations. Now, does that mean that there's not a bunch of folks, you know, operating in this way? And does this mean that there's not a bunch of folks or companies out there that have this type of leadership model? No, there's plenty of organizations, large organizations out there that, you know, use this approach. And sure, you know, they are getting away with it. It's happening. But I promise that they have a higher rate of turnover in their employees, and they are simply less efficient. You know, people operating out of a place of fear are not doing their best work for the company. So that's one type. And then the second type of leadership, the purpose-driven leadership approach that we are trying to power people with, I think you'll see is a little bit different. This type of leadership it's authentic and transparent. It meets people where they're at, and that creates trust and agency. It generates honest communication with team members, which is core to having a high-performing team. It's going to encourage knowledge sharing and collaboration. If that honest communication path is there, you're going to have people more willing to share and collaborate with each other. A really key piece of this is it invites people into a shared story that gives every person in that story purpose, a reason for doing the hard work, right? And this approach also acknowledges that there's no courage without vulnerability. Brené Brown talks about that in her leadership books, the pure fact that you cannot be courageous without also being vulnerable. Every moment in our lives where we have to take a chance and, you know, use some courage, that automatically creates a place of vulnerability for us. And then ultimately, if you're able to embody all those characteristics as a leader, you know, what you're going to do is create a psychologically safe work environment for your team members, which we've talked about before in the series. Mm-hmm. So I know that's a mouthful.
No, but that's great. It actually, what it gets me thinking is like the masked leader is, it's all about preservation of mm-hmm. themselves. Mm-hmm. They're like the center of the universe, like a child.
Yes.
Like me versus the purpose-driven leader is all about the team and the growth of the organization. And, you know, one of the things that as you were talking, I was thinking of is last year I had worked on developing a knowledge-based system for Xenium. And with a small business, it gets interesting because you have these key people who have all the knowledge in their brain. And a masked leader would probably just want to keep that knowledge right there because then they have importance and relevance versus sharing that knowledge in a very public way would, you know, distribute the knowledge and other people can learn and makes them less relevant, right? But that's the purpose-driven leader, is somebody who can like actually distribute knowledge and bring people along together because we're rowing in the same direction for the ultimate goal of the organization, right? So that, I don't know why I thought of that example as just where a masked leader could just want to preserve themselves and keep status.
Yeah, it's, you know, it goes back to more of the primal part of the brain and the basic desire just to want to survive, right? And our little company at Gamut, you know, what I always say, and I talk about this in the leadership classes, you know, my goal is to surround myself with people who are smarter, faster, and more talented than I am, because then I know where the weak link is in the business and I can work on that. You know, it's me, you know, so for better or worse, I think it was Andrew Carnegie who said, you know, he's a great business mind. You know, he said, if you hire dwarves, you're going to stay small. If you hire giants, watch how big you'll get, right? You know, that's the idea, you know, behind purpose-driven leadership is be vulnerable, be okay not with being the center of knowledge, you know, and power in your organization. Distribute that and empower other folks. Ultimately, it's got to make your job easier and less stressful, right? If you spread that knowledge out and empower others to do great work, then you're not having to do it all, right?
And like, because you're helping others inside your organization grow and you're doing it together in a collaborative way, they're probably making the client experience great too. They're taking care of your customers and probably helping you grow the business in the meantime. I think that's the benefit of a purpose-driven leader.
100%. Yeah, exactly. You want, you know, high-performing team members. You know, the last thing, you know, your client wants is to be working with somebody that says, oh, I got to go check with my boss on every critical decision point, right? Like, that's super inefficient for the client. It's not empowering for the individual you have on the team. Again, it's a less effective way to run your company.
Yep. So in leadership, whether in a title or somebody who has those capabilities as a leader, decision-making is a really key component to being an effective leader. You have a quote inside your presentation that I thought I'd just get your feedback on and see what you mean by it. But the quote is, take time to ruminate. Decisions in haste are usually a waste. That's the quote. What do you mean by that? And how is this relevant to what we're talking about today?
Yeah, that's the principle behind the principle in leadership, right? You know, I think being someone who wore the proverbial six shooters on my hip for many years and just calling shots, you know, as fast as I could and not necessarily considering all the repercussions or impacts of those decisions, you know, the older I got and, you know, the more folks I had to lead, I really found that taking a moment to think and then, you know, think again about the decision you're going to make and what those ripple effects are is highly valuable. In this fast-paced business world that we live in, everyone wants an answer and a decision right now in this very moment, you know, go, go, go. And while, yes, sometimes that works, you know, and intuition, you know, and gut and experience all play into that. Taking a pause to make a thoughtful choice about, you know, the big decisions, you know, that you have to make as a leader is critical to, you know, to your success and to the success, you know, of the people that are working with or for you as well. Because our decisions as leaders ultimately impact so many things, whether we're talking about construction or whether we're talking about, you know, an HR firm, it all still comes into play. Ultimately, our decisions are going to impact profit and cash flow in your business more than any single other thing. Again, we can put on the mask and blame whoever we want for poor outcomes of decisions that are made, but ultimately it's up to the leaders. And those decisions that leaders make, they're going to set the tone and guiding principles for your organization, for your team. And at the end of the day, our decisions impact people's lives and livelihoods, you know, and I'll tell you a story later today about exactly what I mean. So again, I'm not talking about procrastinating on making decisions. That's not what this is, right? But ruminating means to take something in, think about it, and think again, you know, before you go in and take your next steps. That's what that quote is supposed to embody.
Decision-making is so tough. I mean, I'm learning stuff about myself every single day as a leader. I mean, there's some times where I'm like, I want to make decisions by committee because it's safer and I want to make sure I'm taking everybody's opinions into account, but things move so much slower. Then there's times where maybe decisions that you're making don't really have a big ripple effect, or at least you're weighing the risks and you're like, okay, I can make this decision in a vacuum because I've either got the experience or I think I have all the possible information. But that's what we're constantly grappling with, right? Is like the speed in which we can make the decision, the risks associated with the wrong decision. And I'm like, I don't think there's any like perfect framework around decision making. And I think that's, you just have to ruminate in it. Like what you're saying, like you just gotta like pause. You might need a guide along the way, a mentor, a colleague, somebody who you could bounce this off of too, and then make the best decision possible at the end of the day. We're not perfect as leaders.
No. Yeah. And then nothing in our leadership, you know, module of F5 talks about being perfect. That's why my gift of failure stories are in there, is to share those kind of, you know, missteps that have happened either by myself or by someone else I was working with. You know, to share like, look, this is ugly and messy what we do as leaders in, you know, in organizations. But if you go at it with the purpose-driven leadership mindset, you know, and those characteristics that we talked about earlier, you're still going to find success and you're still going to find people that want to follow you and work with you if you take that approach. If you make mistakes and you wear the leadership mask at the same time, that's when you're going to fail.
In your presentation, you talk about the characters that we play throughout our lives. And so those characters are victim, villain, don't be a villain, hero, and then the guide. I think you suggest like leaders need to be the guide at the end of the day. Why do you say that?
Yeah. And I, you know, just for clarity's sake, the victim, villain, hero, and guide concept, you know, that's something that comes from Donald Miller and his way of telling stories. And he's a well-written writer, as you know, Brandon. And so, you know, I heard him talk about, you know, these characters that we play in our lives. And it really struck me as core to how we live as humans. I've expanded on that concept and applied it into the business world. And maybe it would help just to clarify the characters a little bit. Every single one of us plays all of these characters, probably on a daily basis.
No, I do not.
Me, myself included. Okay. And so we oscillate back and forth in between these different characters. And, you know, when we're talking about, you know, the victim, we're not talking about folks who've had crimes committed against them or social injustices. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about victimhood mentality when you're not
woe
actually
is me.
Woe is me. And again, we all do it. I did it yesterday. Okay. And then same with the villain. Like, we're not talking about someone who perpetrates, you know, atrocities against others or terrible things like that. We're talking about when we're manifesting feelings of jealousy or self-doubt, cynicism, that kind of stuff. So, you know, and then the hero, that's, you know, someone who's in a transformational moment in their day or in their life, someone who's desiring to become better who they are. And then that guide is someone who's fueled by empathy and experience. And so those are the characters that we're talking about in this story. And again, I'll play those. And I'm sure your listeners would agree that you know, if you're playing the victim or the villain, you're not going to be a very good leader. And frankly, heroes aren't looking for other heroes. Another hero is someone who could take your resources to go accomplish their missions. That's not really who a hero is looking for. A hero is looking for a guide. You know, Luke needed Yoda and Obi-Wan Kenobi. Luke didn't need another Jedi when he was setting out on his first mission. So heroes are looking for guides. And who I say the hero is, that's the folks that work for you. That's your client base. You know, that's your other team members. And as much as you can embody a guide mindset where you're giving your empathy and experience to others, that's what a purpose-driven leader is. Do you have to throw on the cape every once in a while and be the hero? Yes, we are all heroes in our own story. This is all first-person stuff that we do. You know, but for other people, my belief is that in business, your success is going to ultimately be judged on how well you're able to serve others, not just yourself. And that's the guide mentality in our Foundational 5 series.
Yeah. People who should really dive into like Donald Miller's work, because it's when you apply this to business, the marketing messaging becomes more clear. The leadership like attributes will become more clear, because we need all these roles in order for us to even be in business in the first place. You got to have victims, and whether it's like efficiency or time, like whatever, like you're trying to serve your customers with or your people, we need victims, because we need to have a hero. And then the guide is helping the hero solve the problem. These roles are all needed.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. There has to be problems to solve. Otherwise we wouldn't have business, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have time for this, but you tell a good story about like leaders need to understand the business, and you relate the business to a ship. I know this spiel can take a little bit of time, but maybe you can do a condensed version of why a business is like a ship.
Yeah, I'll try. I mean, this is like a 2-hour talk usually by itself, right? But there's tons of different analogies for what a business is, right? And people use analogies to try to simplify what otherwise could be complex ideas, right? And I think a lot of folks don't, even folks who are running businesses, don't really understand all the core components of what a successful business is. And so the ship analogy that I use, you know, we use that analogy when we're working with organizations who are trying to grow. We're giving this analogy not just to the leaders of the company, but every single employee that is part of the growth of that company. We place that in front of them to kind of level the playing field on what is a business really, right? Is it just cash in, cash out, and a paycheck? Like, is that all it is? Or is there more to it that makes it successful? So we use the boat analogy. I believe that anyone can walk up to a boat, whether you're a sailor or not, and look at it. And if you see that the sails are tattered and the hull has got a bunch of holes in it and water's coming in, anyone can walk up to a boat and say, all right, that looks pretty good. I'm going to get on it. Or that boat looks unsafe. There's no way I'm getting on it unless, you know, Johnny Depp is the one, you know, captaining the boat, right? So that's the reason for the sailboat analogy. I think it's very approachable. And then there are the six key components, which we won't dive into today, but the six key components of the sailboat of your business. You have the helm, which is leadership. That's where the leadership, you know, of the boat lives, is in the helm. That's what the leadership module in F5 is all about, is those components within it. The rudder of the sailboat, that's your relationship-based marketing. And that's much different than like cold sales calls. Relationship marketing is based on the relationships that you make within your organization and with your client base that leads to ongoing work. And I choose the rudder because the rudder is what steers the boat, right? You can have great sails, but if you don't have a rudder that tells it which direction you want it to go, you're not going to go anywhere. And we also use the rudder to steer away from danger and those clients that you don't have a good relationship with. That's why it's the rudder. You got the sailboats often have a propeller. Now, a propeller is not required to make the boat sail, but you do use the propeller in moments where it's a tight spot, where you got to park the boat, you know, in a really tight spot, or you got to get it out of the dock, right? And the propeller is your cold solicitations. Your boat shouldn't rely on them, right? But, you know, cold sales are a part of business where you have to reach out to folks that you don't know. And so you do need to turn that propeller on sometimes to make the boat go.
Could that mean also hiring a lot of people? Like I know in organizations with heavy growth, in order to scale, they need people to do the work. And so I imagine the propeller could fit like not only just sales and marketing, but also like hiring the right people to get the work done.
Absolutely. That also we talk about in that section as well. Yeah. Then the sales of your boat, that's the most, you know, critical part. That's your products, your services. And a lot of organizations, it's not some, you know, doodad or thingy, it's your people. You know, most of the organizations that we work with, their product is the people that they, you know, have on construction projects and what their talents and knowledge base are. You got to have really well-intentioned and well-crafted sails if you want your boat to sail far and fast. And then the hull of the boat, you know, that's the biggest, heaviest part of the boat, and that's overhead, right? And every organization has overhead, and it's absolutely necessary. You wouldn't have a sailboat without a hull, right? You have to have something down there to carry all the people that are on it. And then the last part is, you know, your fuel source or fuel tank. You know, even sailboats have some sort of fuel source on them for powering their navigation system and powering that propeller when you need it. And your fuel tank, that's cash flow. You got to have positive cash flow in your business or you will crash.
You'll sink.
You'll sink. Yeah. Or your boat will be stuck in the middle of the ocean.
Or stuck. Yeah, you're right.
So yeah, there's a lot of meat on each one of those bones within our discussion about the six key components of a successful business. But that's the 6-minute version of that analogy.
That's great. And so like for leaders, tying it back to this principle that we're talking about with leadership, I imagine that you're coaching true like leaders by title on how to define each of these areas of the business so that all of your employees across every level could then come along with and know if they want to be on that boat or not.
Absolutely. Again, that's why, you know, we have the simple analogies to make it approachable. So, you know, we teach it to leadership of companies and the employees, but then the leadership of that company can take this analogy and continue to run with it. And all the tasks and best practices and tools that we give them within each one of those six areas of the business, they can keep employing those and deploying those throughout the life of the organization after we're gone and we've got them off the dock, right?
Yeah. In my world, we talk a lot about, you know, the HR space where we talk a lot about mission, vision, values, guiding principles. You can, you know, a lot of interchangeable stuff there. You talk about it in your presentation, the differences between guiding principles and mission. You have some good analogies for those. Why don't you share those?
Yeah, that's part of the leadership navigation system that we talk about in this module. I'm not going to pretend to be the smartest business mind in the world or even in my own city.
You're pretty sharp.
You know, but you know, these are, again, this is the lessons I'm learning through my own organization and all the study I've found. One of the core tools in the leadership navigation system is having an actionable mission statement or multiple mission statements. And what I've found with organizations, and again, myself included, as I started my own company, is folks get the difference between guiding principles and a mission statement screwed up all the time. They get,
yes,
they get,
I see it all the time.
Yeah. Commingled and interchanged. And it's like, no, they are totally different things. They complement each other. Yes.
Yes.
They are separate things. And so I have to boil this stuff down to simple terms because that's the way my brain works. The simplest way I can describe the difference is your guiding principles are your compass. All right. And the directions on your compass never change. North is north, south is south, and so on. Right. But your mission or multiple missions, because you can have multiple missions running at once in your organization and in your life. The mission is the map or maps. Right. And you can take your compass, your guiding principles, and you can walk on any map, any route that you want. It's still going to point you in the right same cardinal directions, but you're just, you know, on a different mission or working off a different map. So that's the simplest way I can boil it down.
Yeah.
And you have to have both, right? The missions that you set out on should be based on the guiding principles of the organization, right?
Yep. So just like, let's bring this back to the boat that we were talking about. So the boat is the how. It's how we're going to reach the destination. The destination is whatever problem we're solving in the market. Building a building, helping small businesses with HR compliance, whatever we're doing, right? So the boat is the vessel in which we can get to the destination. The mission guides us, and then the guiding principles is the compass. It keeps us heading in the right direction.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, yeah, part of that leadership navigation system is this actionable mission statement script that we give organizations to, and it's very simple. It's a very simple script. I think mission statements turn into these big, fancy, silver-tongued paragraphs that become useless. Our script is very simple. It's actionable, has tangible deliverables, and they have an end. Missions have an end. So a mission statement is not something that stands the test of time. That's your guiding principle. Missions have a beginning, middle, and end, and they have some sort of tangible outcome. So in our organization, we have, you know, three different missions going probably all at once, but they all have tangible deliverables and they all have an end. And then we set out on new missions when that one is accomplished, again, based on the guiding principles of the company.
Well said. I know we're running a little, I got a couple more things for you, and then I want you to get to your gifts of failure. So, you know, just in your leadership journey, I'm curious what you believe are the biggest traps that you've fallen into as a leader. I know what mine would be. I mean, and I'll give you time to think about it. So like, I always think of like, time is the only thing I have. So misusing time, not prioritizing things the right way. And those are probably two of the biggest things, or not trusting myself to make the decision. I think that's another big one.
I've struggle with all of those examples.
Yeah. I think most people can relate to that.
Yeah. I think, I'll tell you about the thieves of time here in a second, which ties into that question, but if I were going to try to pick one thing out of the air that has been and still can be a trap for me as a leader is trying to solve everyone's problems for them, right? Thinking I have to be the one to solve every single person's problem that I'm either they work for me or work with me. Like not delegating effectively to other people right. to help solve.
And problem. If you're talking about the guide, like that's where we want to be as leaders, not asking the right questions or not coaching them in the right way. You're trying to solve the problem is what you're saying.
You put the cape on, you go back into hero mode.
You're trying to be the hero. Yeah.
And that, again, that's very common. And I mean, if they're, you know, I'm not saying it's a bad trait, but it's a detrimental trait to your growth as a leader. And it's also holding back other folks from being able to grow. So, and again, like we have, like you said, we have a limited amount of time to solve issues every day. And, you know, we talk about it in the leadership section that time is the most finite resource on earth. It's not lithium or fossil fuels. Even the richest people in the world can't make more time. And so the way that we treat our time is absolutely critical. William Penn said, time is what we want most, but it's what we use the worst, right? And I talk about something I call the thieves of time. There's lots of thieves out here, and these thieves we're never going to be able to completely defeat. But let me rattle these off to you and see if you identify with any of these. Here's my thieves of time that I think leaders struggle with every day. Inbox worshiping, the ever holy.
I'm better about this now. I used to be terrible at this.
Yeah, it used to be.
I'm way better.
Probably the first thing you looked at in the morning and the last thing you looked at,
oh, yeah.
Right? And you lived off it. It was your to-do list, right? So inbox worshiping. attending non-essential meetings, those meetings that you're in and you keep asking yourself, why am I here? Am I adding value, right? Newsfeed or social media doom scrolling, right? You know, that one, again, it's a thief I battle myself.
That's so bad.
And usually what I find is, at least for me personally, like I'll start on a doom scroll right before I'm about to do something challenging, whether it's making a tough phone call or I know I have to build this really expansive presentation or, you know, I need to write a, you know, construction schedule, whatever it is. And I'll be like, you know, before I do that, I'm just going to check Facebook real quick and see what's going on there.
Why?
Right. You know, and then you're all of a sudden you're doom scrolling and you look up and half an hour has gone by and you've just wasted that time you had to take on that task, right?
And it can get you in a different mood too. I've been to times where I've doom scrolled and I saw something I didn't like and it pissed me off.
Yeah.
And then it totally took me out of my element for probably like clear thinking and, you know, making a decision, being productive or whatever. And it's like, it's just not worth it.
Exactly. Yeah. You're wondering if the world's going to end tomorrow or whatever, right? You know? So yeah. Again, a thief, right? A thief that you and I aren't going to solve this, right? We're not going to, you know, make this thief go away for everybody, but recognizing it when you're about to pick up the phone and do the doom scroll, like, oh, okay, don't do that. You know, never moves the needle on my productivity for the day. You know, that's what we're looking for. You know, the next one is what I call schedule plugging. And what that is, there's this amazing phenomenon. You know, I bet you keep your schedule on your cell phone. So if you took your cell phone out right now and you looked at next week, I bet it's really busy and it's crazy. And you're like, gosh, how am I going to, you know, take on all this stuff, right? And same for me, right? But if you or I were to take out our phones right now and say, fast forward to, July or August, it probably looks pretty open. Yeah, we probably got some trips on the calendar and there's some standing meetings, but you got all this white space on your calendar. Like, wow, things are going to be great then. But what happens was now you fast forward to July and then you look at your calendar like, oh my God, like there's no white space left on my calendar, right?
It's the hamster wheel, man. It's like,
yeah. Yeah. Again, we all do this, you know, or lots of us do this. We're not, you know, innocent of it, but again, you know, it's knowing that that thief is there and it's always going to be there to take the time if you let it. If you ruminate for a second, you know, and about how you're setting your future self up and think, okay, well, maybe I don't need to take on that project or, you know, because I know these other things are going to fill in, or maybe I don't need to book, you know, 4 happy hours a month from now, you know, in consecutive days, you know, whatever it is, right? You just be more intentional about how you're organizing your future schedule for your future self. And then the last one is perfectionism. And there's 2 perfectionists talking on this podcast right now. I know that, you know, and there's a bunch of perfectionists listening to your podcast as well. There's a bunch of us out there. And it's not something to be taken lightly. I think perfectionism is a very serious issue that, again, really can hold us back as leaders. And this is not... Perfectionism is a tough word to define because I think people think about it differently. So how I try to describe it is it's the glitter and rhinestone on your jeans that no one else cares about except for you. Okay. It's the stuff that you're doing to your spreadsheets or to your wonderful emails or to your presentations that ultimately it's stuff that you're picking on yourself about and really no one else looking at it. Okay. The glitter and rhinestone that goes on top. Okay. It doesn't add any value, really. It's that kind of stuff. And where that comes from, my belief is the perfectionism mindset actually comes from when you're manifesting villain, actually, mentality. And again, villain mentality is not, I'm going to go rob a bank. That's not what we're talking about here. It's when you have self-doubt, potentially jealousy, or, you know, you're worried that you're not, you know, going to belong in the group. You know, it's that kind of, you know, mentality that manifests that triggers perfectionism to come into play.
Yes.
Or it's got to be perfect. Otherwise, people aren't going to accept me for who I am.
So I think about perfectionism a little differently when you're talking about the glitter and rhinestones. I'm like, okay, I get that. You know, for regular producers of quality work, they see the stuff on the margins that other people probably don't really care about. I think about it differently with myself specifically. I think of it as in like it's paralyzing a momentum with whatever I'm producing. I'm in marketing, so it could be like this podcast isn't perfect. I'm not going to publish it. Whereas people need to hear what we're going to say. And it I get paralyzed in decision making, or it slows me down, and that could inhibit my ability to be an effective leader.
Yep.
At the end of the day.
Analysis paralysis, right? That's exactly, I totally co-sign with that definition of it. Yep.
Okay. I'm going to let you get out of here in a second. Give me your gift of failure story regarding this leadership principle.
Okay. Well, I'll try to keep this short, and per usual, I'll try to keep the details vague enough anyways, but you know, everything we've talked about today, you know, the leadership navigation system, you know, masked leadership versus purpose-driven leadership, taking time to ruminate and not making hasty decisions, all of that, all those best principles, all those tools that we talked about ties into, you know, this story, this gift of failure story. So the project is it's about $100 million project, a very fast-paced project at an airport. Airport projects are always fast-paced. So a very large-scale job, pretty complex design, but actually not nearly the most challenging project I have encountered. And a great team of individuals on my side, a really great client to work with as well, but a young team on our side as well, except for myself and my counterpart, you know, the general superintendent on the project. So myself and my counterpart, we befriended each other very early on. We had similar mindsets, you know, about what quality leadership looks like. And we committed to each other early in the project that we wanted to be mentors for this young group of individuals that were working for us on the project. So we made that like intentional commitment early on that like, hey, we want to be guides. Before I was talking about, you know, this whole guide mentality, we, even on that project, we knew that we needed to be set up as guides. He'd seen a bunch of big construction, had all sorts of wild stories. I'd seen a bunch of big construction, had all sorts of wild stories. And so we were like, okay, we know what needs to happen here. We've seen it all. You know, these folks haven't. So how can we set them up to be successful on the project? Let them learn some lessons, but don't let them, you know, fall all the way down to the bottom of the, you know, pits of despair that he and I had both been in ourselves, right? So just kind of, I want to baseline, you know, the leadership mindset approach that we had taken. So then we progressed into construction. Again, very fast-paced, complex design, you know, for the building, but we're doing well. And then we finally got to the point where we put the roof on the building. And it was the first time in my career, it's about a $500,000 roof, pretty large roof. It was the first time in my career where we were actually were able to put the roof on my building when it wasn't raining outside. You know, most of my projects are in Oregon. And so you're always dealing with rain, and somehow our schedules always end up being during the, 9 months of rain that we have during the year. And so the first time in my career is like, wow, we just put the roof on. We didn't have to deal with rain. It was an extremely dry spring that year. And so I was like, that was way too easy. What's going to happen next? Right. And so roof goes on and it's great. And then Memorial Day weekend comes up, which is a long weekend, obviously. And I'm sitting there on the job site and I get a weather alert that, you know, that some flash flooding and thunderstorms were headed our way. And I'm like, oh my gosh, all right, that's concerning. And there was one area of the roof that was not completely enclosed by the exterior cladding. And that was for a variety of reasons related to design complexities and some other stuff. And so I knew that there was this one area of the roof that was not completely enclosed. And so I text my general superintendent, the other guide, right? And I say, hey, I just got this weather alert. You know, did you see that? You know, do we have a plan to make sure that that's buttoned up so that no rain gets into our waterproof system? And he texted back right away. He's like, yeah, actually, we saw that at 7 a.m. this morning. You know, I've already directed our team to go out there and make sure that it's protected so that no rain gets in. And my counterpart there, he had already left for the day. He had another engagement. So he was off site. So, you know, in my mind, though, I'm like, okay, sweet. They got it. I don't need to worry about it anymore. And I move on and I go do, you know, 3 more meetings that day. And then I bug out for the long weekend, just like everyone else. Well, sure enough, you know, thunderstorms come, driving rain. It was a record-setting rain day for that day in Oregon history. It was the most rain we had received in that single day. You know, but in my mind, it's like, okay, I was told it was taken care of, so I don't need to worry about it, right? So I come back the following week, I'm sitting there at my desk, 9 a.m., and, you know, I'm just catching up on emails, like, wow, sweet, nothing bad happened, cool, you know, and then I get a phone call.
Oh, no.
Yes, and it's one of our younger team members. He's standing there out on the roof of this building, and he says, Josh, I need to cut a hole in our roof. And I said, why would you do that? Yeah, don't cut a hole. Like, what are you talking about? I was like, did we miss something? Did we forget to install some piece of equipment? Like, what is it? And he's like, no, nothing like that. You remember the rain that we had over the weekend? I was like, sure, I remember. But I was told that we were good to go. And he said, well, the protection measures that the field team decided to use didn't work. And we got water under our roof. And I just got a pit.
Was it trapped? Was the water trapped in the roof somehow? So it didn't make it in the interior, but it's inside like the actual roof.
Sandwiched between the roof. The roof in some areas was over 30 inches thick with insulation.
I imagine.
And so it was basically trapped in between the top layer of the roof and then the structural deck underneath. So it wasn't leaking down, but water and roof systems don't work. Like, you can't have water trapped underneath your roof. It's bad news, right? For all sorts of reasons. So anyways, I said, okay, well, don't do anything yet. We're coming out there and we'll make a decision together. So myself and the general superintendent, I tell him what's going on and he's like, oh my God. So we drive out to the site, we get up there on the roof and then, have my team there. Our young team is there. We have a special roof inspector there that's employed by the client to make sure the installations go well. That person's standing there. Our roofing subcontractor is standing there. And we're all looking at each other like, what do we do? And, so we have moisture testing devices. So we're moisture testing the roof. And sure enough, there appears to be water down there. And so it's like, okay, let's cut a hole and find out what's going on.
Geez.
Yeah. And so we cut a hole, a 12 inch by 12 inch hole in our brand new roof. So we cut a hole, we look down and sure enough, there's, a half an inch of water sitting at the bottom of our roof line. And it was sitting at the low end of the roof. And the area that was supposedly temporarily protected was at the high end of the roof. So that means all this water started at the high end and went all the way through to the low end of the roof, which means there's water underneath our entire roof.
The whole thing.
And so we, and I realize all this in the moment. The moment we cut that hole and I look down, I've lived through some really epic water stories already, as I've shared some of that. And so I know everything that's coming at us next, right? And at the same time, we're only 5 months away from trying to complete this project. And we're already on a tight time schedule and the angst and anxiety and fear and frustrations are building up on the entire project team. And you can feel that tension building. And then when this roof thing happens, it's kind of like pop, right? Like, oh, yep. Right. And so now I'm thinking like, how are we going to tear a whole roof off and put a whole new roof on while trying to complete the entire building in 5 months? This is crazy. And my body language changes. People can see that I'm frustrated. I'm not yelling or anything like that, but people can see Josh. Uh-huh. Josh is not normal Josh. And I just say, I need a minute. I need to walk away. So I walk away from about 12 people and I go around a corner to breathe and think.
I do that with my kids a lot, by the way.
Same. Yeah. When I'm doing well, I walk away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I just took a moment. I ruminated. I walked around the corner and I started doing the thought process of everything that has to happen next in order to make this right. And then my general superintendent walks around the corner with me and we have a very frank and open conversation about what we think should happen. And we ruminated together about it and discussed our options. And, as folks listen to this story, folks usually think, okay, well, first of all, you're going to fire whoever made the decision to use the protection measures that they did, right? Because that was a clear mistake. And it was a clear mistake. The right options for protecting it were there on the site. They could have made the right choice. They made the wrong choice. They made a hasty, inexperienced decision. All right. But myself and the general superintendent, we talked with each other. We both had opportunities to correct this. And, he could have clearly laid out exactly what he meant by protect this open area. I could have physically still walked out on site and observed what they decided to do. And in that moment said, no. That's not going to work. Here's what we need to do. He didn't do what he could have done, the extra step as a leader. I didn't do what I could have done, taking an extra step as a leader. And we decided in that moment, no, we're not firing that person. And we're not going to go blaming the design team for delaying the design of that area so we could have closed it up in time. We're going to own this. This is on us. We are the leaders. We are the ones making the decisions. We are the ones calling the shots. And we're going to take ownership for this issue. We made that decision within those 5 minutes of us just chatting around the corner away from everybody. And when we came back, everyone was scared of what we were about to say. And the people who made the decision the subcontractor, you know, everyone thought we were going to come out guns blazing, right? Which is path A. And I've gone down path A plenty of times. I know how path A ends. It doesn't bring a project together. And with only 5 months left, we knew we needed to bring the project together. We needed every single person to execute. And so we came back and we told them, okay, here's what we're going to do. And we laid out a clear plan on how we're going to remedy the issue. And we said, you know, myself and him, we are taking ownership of this. We just need you guys to execute the plan. We will deal with the client. We will deal with our own executive team, and we are taking ownership of this issue. All right. And when we did that, you could see everyone's shoulders like relax. You could see their body language physically change in the moment. I can still see it clear as day as I tell the story. Like the relief was visible in these people. And then especially the folks who were afraid they were about to lose their job, those people turned into purpose-driven leaders on the project. We took them aside and said, hey, this wasn't the way we needed this to get done. We acknowledge we didn't give clear direction, but now what we need from you is to execute the rest of the work as well as you can. Come to us when you have questions. If we don't give you clear direction, we want you to come and ask us for clarity, and we need your help delivering this project on time. And so those people became some of the driving forces to making sure the project actually got done on time, and we did. And yes, we did replace the roof.
Wow.
And that sucked.
The whole thing?
But you know what? That's what insurance is for, unfortunately. So we did replace the roof, but it did not impact turning over the space to the client on time. And when the client saw the way that we decided to handle that issue, and we didn't come out guns blazing, blaming everybody else that we could, the client wanted to be part of the solution too. They're like, okay, what can we do? How can we make this achievable without impacting, you know, the turnover of the day? How can we make this lesser of an impact on you guys? You know, they wanted to help. The design team wanted to help. The roofing inspector wanted to help. Everyone wanted to help because no one had the ugly leadership masks on. We threw them away. And so that was the gift out of that epic failure. Again, we're talking about a $1 million failure at the end of the day. But the gift was the young folks on our team that made the error. They are now thriving in their current roles at these companies. They're doing great. The client was ultimately extremely satisfied with the project, and that relationship has continued. And we got a chance to embody what I believe is purpose-driven leadership, myself and my counterpart on that project.
What an incredible story. And you had a good ending. That's the beauty of this. I can only imagine if this was like the new PDX roof, the giant like timber or whatever.
Wood roof?
Yeah, the wood roof. That thing is massive. The pictures that I've seen, and I'm sure it costs a lot of money. So I'm glad it wasn't that roof.
Yeah, me too. It might have been on the same property, but it wasn't that roof.
Unbelievable. I appreciate you coming on the podcast and sharing that story and just the whole leadership principle in general. We're going to be having you back to talk about two more principles. Agencies next, I believe. And then what's the fifth one?
Relationships. And we end with relationships, not because it's any less important, but because the first four principles are focused really internally on yourself and how you lead yourself. And operate, you know, well. And then relationships is how you interact with others. You got to be healthy yourself to be able to enter into healthy relationships. So that's why we wrap up the series with that.
My guest today has been Josh Durham. Josh, I really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Brandon. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning in for today's episode of Transform Your Workplace. The content on this show is strictly for general information and educational purposes only, so that you can go transform your workplace in a positive way. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on the show are the guest's own and don't represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of either Zenium HR, the sponsor of the show, or me, the host, Brandon Laws. Additionally, Zenium HR or myself, Brandon Laws, doesn't endorse any guest, their business, or any organization they represent. So discretion is advised. We encourage you to work with a trusted advisor to find a custom approach that fits your organization's needs. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode.